I'm not going to read all that crap.
Yeah, no, I don't expect you to read all that crap.
Okay, time to get back to work. Our next presenter is Ryan Henry. And Ryan is going to talk to us about nuisance abatement. He is an attorney with the law firm of Denton, Navarro, Rocha, Bernal in San Antonio, which is a prominent law firm, by the way. They do litigation defense for governmental entities, you know, people like municipal judges and cities and things like that. And Ryan's also the city attorney and city prosecutor for Hollywood Park and the city of Burnett, Texas. Let's give him a welcome.
Morning. Can everyone hear me okay? Okay. Good deal. Just making sure. If you can't hear me, let me know. And I hope this is a nice big room. We got some room to move around. I tend to wander a little bit when I don't have a judge telling me I have to stay at the podium. I'm going to talk to you today about nuisance abatement. Before I do, I need to cover just a couple of housekeeping matters. The first being, just to let everyone know, I was not really presenter for this. I'm kind of a sub. And I say that only to let you know that the PowerPoint presentation was prepared beforehand, so if anything's wrong or misspelled, it ain't my fault. All right, before we get started, everyone should have a little pad next to you. I want you to take out one piece of paper. And then crumple it up into a nice little ball. Perfect. Now, set it on the top right side of where you're sitting on your desk. All right. Now, I'm going to try and get through this topic relatively quickly. Hopefully, we can learn some stuff, and no one will be bored. I'm going to try and avoid this.
In 1930, the Republican-controlled House of Representatives, in an effort to alleviate the effects of the, anyone, the Great Depression, passed the, anyone, a tariff bill, the Hawley-Smoot Tariff Act, which anyone raised or lowered, raised tariffs in an effort to collect more revenue for the federal government. Did it work?
If I get to that point, you can take that paper and throw it at me. If I've been at that point for too long, you'll be a heap already, and you won't be throwing anything at me. But we'll try and avoid that. All right, we're going to be talking about nuisance abatements. And when we're talking about nuisance abatements, it really goes back to the basics. And when I'm talking about basics, I'm talking about the core power of your courts. We're talking about the jurisdiction of your municipal courts. Now, as TMCEC will tell you over and over and over again, municipal courts, you are state courts, and you are courts of limited jurisdiction. And so you have to figure out exactly what is the scope of your jurisdiction to know what you can do and what you can't do. There's criminal and there's civil remedies when you're talking about nuisance abatements. The type of court you are will determine what powers you have. How many courts of record do we have here today? A few. How many on record here today? A lot. Yeah, that's usually the way it works. But you need to listen carefully. And just when we're talking about the stuff that affects courts of non-record need to pay attention for a couple of reasons. One, there are some aspects where it's going to transition over. And you'll have to work with some other entities, whether you're record or not. And you'll have to know the basics of what we're talking about for the courts of record. And two, I had one municipal judge call me up not too long ago, and she basically said, you know, I usually zoned out when talking about courts of record because I'm not one. Next month, my counsel made me one. And so where do I start to get back up to speed? It's always helpful to know which, you know, both courts so you don't get caught unprepared. You need to be able to figure out, based on what you are, what you can do and what you can't do.
I find you.
Top quiz, hot shot. There's a bomb on a bus.
Once the bus goes 50 miles an hour, the bomb is armed. If it drops below 50, it blows up. What do you do? What do you do?
Pop quiz. Does a municipal court have any civil jurisdiction? Yes. Sometimes. Depending on what court you are. Will depend on what kind of civil jurisdiction you have. The short summary of what we're going to be talking about today is going to be Texas Local Government Code, Chapters 214, Chapter 54, and the Transportation Code, 683. Courts of record have limited civil jurisdiction. Courts of non-record, you have some jurisdiction, but not really in the context of what we're talking about here for civil processes. So, you do and you don't. What we're going to be talking about today with nuisance abatement really is going to be focusing on health and safety issues. You're talking about dilapidated buildings, dangerous structures, things like that. This before, we talked about hoarders. How many people attended that one? Yeah. You gazed at some of the stuff people actually hoard and the conditions that they're in. Hoarding, however, you can have a hoarders, but they can be organized hoarders, and so there's really no health and safety issues. It's when it gets to be a health and safety concern that the rest of these statutes kick in. And now, I want to talk to you guys about, you know, we're going to be talking about nuisance abatements. Most of it will be theoretical because, as we all know, every single citizen in our jurisdiction always keeps their home in absolute pristine condition, always mows the lawn, and always keeps the paint and the structural aspects of it completely up to code. And so you probably won't need to use a lot of that all the time. But it's helpful to know the theory anyway. I don't know why we put so many slides in there. But, okay, and what are those? Vultures. What does it mean when you've got vultures on your roof? You got something dead in your yard or nearby, and that's not a good thing. Now, we're talking about true nuisance abatements, when the structures really are dilapidated, not just when they look dilapidated. That's a paint job. That one is perfectly structurally sound. Although I don't think the neighbors liked it very much. Okay, Chapter 214 of the Local Government Code. And I like to do things a little dynamically. If anyone has any questions, comments, you didn't hear me, you think I'm wrong, whatever, raise your hand, shout out. At least lets me know you're listening. All right. Municipality may establish an ordinance that allows, after notice in a hearing, to vacate, secure, repair, or demolish a building which is substandard and a threat to public health or is unsecured against unlawful entry. This is the first place you're going to go for what it is you're supposed to enforce. Nuisance abatement options. Well, actually, let's back up a minute. I want you to pay close attention to this. The municipality may establish an ordinance that allows for this. A lot of the stuff we're going to be talking about today, while you are state courts, some of your power flows from your cities. You can enforce these state statutes, but only if your city passes an ordinance that lets you. Always helpful to be proactive. Your prosecutors, your city attorneys that are there, if you don't already have one, you need to talk to them about getting an ordinance that grants you this authority, that grants you this jurisdiction. Because if there's not an ordinance that provides for you to have this ability, then you don't have it. Nuisance abatement options. 14, under 4. Your city can create what's called a Structural Standards Commission. This takes it out of the municipal court realm, sort of, and really just creates a commission of certain qualified individuals to handle substandard buildings and structures and things like that. You can enforce your structural standards ordinance in a court of record. You can enforce it in a district or county court. Or you can just cite the heck out of them until even the vultures are dead. The problem with criminal citations is what? You're citing them, but that won't necessarily abate the nuisance. It's a bunch of fines. And we'll get into some alternatives, especially non-courts of records, you can use when you're presented with this problem. But for the most part, it is not, you know, the criminal citations aren't directly addressed to fix the abatement itself. You're just punishing the individual for allowing it to continue. All of them require that ordinance that I talked about. So when you get back, look up your ordinance or ask your prosecutor to go look it up or your city attorney. If they don't have it, they might want to get it. 214.001p, a hearing under this subchapter may be held by a civil municipal court. It actually references a civil municipal court. No direct statute that says municipal courts have civil jurisdiction. It's kind of cherry-picked. You've got to look for them in different sections. And we're going to talk about a couple of those right now. So we're going to talk about criminal versus civil jurisdiction. Government Code 29 says a municipal court, including a court of record, shall have exclusive original jurisdiction within the territorial limits in criminal cases that arise under an ordinance, a rule of a joint board operating an airport, and are punishable by a fine not to exceed, you know, your $500 or your $2,000 for health, safety, zoning issues, things like that. A municipal court has concurrent jurisdiction with your justice court in all criminal cases arising under state law that are punishable by fine only, arise under 106 of the Alcoholic Beverage Code. A municipal court has jurisdiction in the forfeiture and final judgment of all bail bonds and personal bonds taken in criminal cases. But you got the kind of stuff that you deal with normally every day. Let's go to the next chapter of the government code, chapter 30. This applies strictly to courts of record. A municipal court of record has jurisdiction provided by general law, which means all the jurisdiction that a non-record court has. And the governing body of a municipality, by ordinance, may provide that the court... So why am I highlighting this all by itself? You got to have an ordinance. If you don't have an ordinance, you can't do what we're about to talk about. You can have civil jurisdiction for the purposes of enforcing the specific ordinances which are enacted under 214, subchapter E, Transportation Code, and that's dealing with junk vehicles. You have concurrent jurisdiction with a district or county court only under subchapter B of chapter 54 of the local government code. What the legislature does with municipal courts is it gives you very narrowed and focused jurisdiction really based on topics. Okay, so you can't go outside of the subchapters from which you've been granted your jurisdiction and authority. As judges, I'll just caution you that if you get a prosecutor that tries to get you and reference other sections of Chapter 54 or 214, they may not be lying, and you may not have any jurisdiction to consider some of those arguments or some of those issues. Okay. Chapter 30.00005, D3, it authorizes you to issue search warrants for the purpose of investigating a health and safety nuisance abatement and seizure warrants for the purpose of securing, removing, and demolishing an offending property and removing the property. So you can issue warrants to your officers, to your code enforcement officers, assuming they're certified, and seizure warrants to go ahead and secure a building, but on your record, when your city attorney or your prosecutor is presenting this information to you, you need to make sure it's very clear what the violation is, exactly what portion of the ordinance it's in noncompliance with, and where the health and safety issue comes from. That's the best way to ensure It's as bulletproof as you can make it feel. There is no such statute for a court of non-record.
I can find you.
Pop quiz, hot shot.
Pop quiz. Why? Why would... Exactly. Trial de novo. What is the appellate standard for a court of non-record? Trial de novo. So you go through it all again. The reason the legislature doesn't give non-record courts this jurisdiction is need. Health and safety issues need to be taken care of quickly. If you go through a non-court of record and get a novo review and start all over again in a court of record, you're prolonging the process. And so a court of record can take it. If you have a non-court of record, your city attorney needs to go straight to county or district court. Authorization, local government, chapter 51. The municipality may adopt an ordinance that is good for the government, the peace, is necessary to carry out powers granted by law. That's just a very general topic, but it can't grant the municipal court authority that it doesn't already have. Chapter 54. Now, and you get asked, and a clever defense lawyer that comes in may start questioning you about overlap. You're going to have overlap between Chapter 54 and Chapter 14, because they both grant you power to deal with some standard buildings and structures. Okay? 54 is a little broader, because it allows ordinance violations, zoning violations, and other things. 214 is a little more focused. Chapter 54, you can enforce an ordinance, and you can punish not to exceed $500, except for ordinances governing fire safety, zoning, or public health and sanitation, dumping of refuge, which is a maximum fine. Now, these are a separate violation for each day that the nuisance exists. You probably saw some worse pictures in the hoarding seminar that, or talk that you had before. Going back, just because people have a mess in their house, that's not a public health issue. But they can have a mess up to where it becomes a health issue. Yes, ma'am, I see a question. Each day? That's a good question. Do you have to file a complaint, a separate complaint, for each day of the violation? The best conservative advice I can tell you is yes. Okay, that's the best way to do it. It keeps it crisp and clear. That doesn't mean you can't try them simultaneously. Okay, but you have them separated by their own complaint number. And one thing that a couple of my cities will do is when they have something like that, they will assign a cause number, and then they will put a dash and an A or a B or a dash and a 1 and a 2, okay? And that will be a separate cause number if you get multiple violations that are issued all at once. So the main cause number stays there, but you have a separate complaint for each and every violation, okay? And that, one of the biggest reasons for that, I mean, it helps separate. Yes, it helps making sure you're getting them for the exact day that they're. But it allows, that's the best way to allow separate punishments. Okay? Separate complaint, separate punishment, and that just keeps it all nice and clean so you don't have any problems on appeal. Okay, when you have hoarding or you have health and safety issues, you have to make sure you demonstrate why it's a health and safety issue. Because that's standard that your city will be held to on any if your orders are ever challenged. Man, that's ugly. All right, let's talk a little bit about the civil remedies under Chapter 54. Now, let me ask you guys something. Why do you think the legislature is enforcing this civilly? Why is it giving you so many civil enforcement options? Any idea? Anyone? 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 Yes, ma'am. Notice enforcement issues are not criminal, which means what? Burden of proof. Preponderance of the evidence versus beyond reasonable doubt. It's easier for the city to prove its case in a civil context. It's not a beyond a reasonable doubt standard. And why are they doing that? It's a direct health and safety issue. That's why the legislature has designed this type of scheme. Chapter 54, Section 012, allows for civil action to enforce code violations. However, jurisdiction and venue are in the district court or the county court of law. Except, you have to bounce back over to Chapter 30, that says that a municipal court of record has concurrent jurisdiction for subchapter B, chapter 54, enforcement. What this means is, when you look at chapter 54, a municipal court's jurisdiction isn't anywhere in there. All chapter 54 says is you can enforce this in district and county court. So if you get a clever defense attorney that comes into you, you get a case that comes up and he says, "Judge, you don't have any jurisdiction to hear this." It clearly says district and county court. It doesn't mention municipal court. And you can say, very good. Check the other portions of the law. Chapter 30 says jurisdiction. One of its primary objectives, whether you are criminal or civil, is to petition anything, is to assess whether or not you have jurisdiction. So you know if you have jurisdiction. And I'm saying it this way to let you see. If your prosecutor doesn't know the answer, you're allowed to tell him. A municipality may bring a civil action to enforce preservation of public safety regarding building construction relating to fire safety of a building or other improvement, for zoning and land use, establishing criteria for land subdivisions, which we won't talk about today, implementing civil penalties for conduct classified as Class C misdemeanors, relating to dangerously damaged or deteriorated structures, relating to accumulation of refuse, vegetation, etc., design and illumination of sexually oriented businesses. Unfortunately, we won't be talking about that today. And point source effluent limitations. Chapter 54 gives a very broad authority. It was originally designed just for district and county courts. Chapter 30 of the government code is the one that brought in municipal court in order to give you that very focused and specific jurisdiction to help. Chapter 54, 016, says you have injunction power to prohibit specific conduct that violates the ordinance. Now, does a municipal court usually have injunctive power? No, you don't. Not normally, not unless the statute says you do. Well, guess what? The statute says you do. Do you normally have declaratory power? No. You don't have any declaratory power. And unfortunately, this one doesn't give it to you. So you still don't have any declaratory power. And it requires specific conduct that is necessary for the compliance of the ordinance. Your injunctive power is limited to the Chapter 54 enforcement. Only if you're a court of record. That is correct. There is a civil penalty that can be in place. Now, let's go back about that. Only a court of record. How many judges here actually practice law outside of being a municipal judge? Several of you. Do either of you deal with injunctions? Do any of you deal with injunctions normally? Okay, what's the standard when you're dealing with injunctions? Immediate and irreparable harm. That's right. When you invoke your injunctive power, you are held to the same standards as your district court counterparts with regard to what the city has to prove for its injunctive relief. And as a court of record, it is appealable directly and interlocutory. Civil penalties. You may impose a civil penalty up to $1,000 a day for a violation of Chapter 54, $5,000 a day for a violation relating to effluent and pollution. So if your city prosecutor or city attorney really doesn't like the individual, and they've got a real mess over there, they would have to try to effluent or pollutant, and they can get a $5,000 a day penalty, assuming they prove it to you as the court, as the judge. Actions for repair or demolition of structures. The city may bring an action to compel the repair or demolition of a structure or remove the structure and recovery costs, which means the individual can be ordered to abate the nuisance, and if they don't, you can grant the city the authority to go on and do it, and they can charge the offender. Now, that's one of those, a judgment may only be as good as the paper it's written on. When do you normally get a lot of dangerous structures? I mean, they come up with a variety of different issues. The majority of them tend to be when you have somebody that doesn't either know they own the building, they can't afford to maintain the building. Sometimes nobody knows who owns the building. The individual died, it's gone through probate, and it's just sitting there, deteriorating day after day after day. And so you may not be able to get any money back for the city. The city won't be able to actually cash in on it, but it still needs to be in your judgment if you're going to allow recovery costs. Because as long as it's in the judgment, the city can worry about how to collect it or enforce it later. Question, yes, sir. Yes. To abate properties under 2903? Yes. Yes. If you're talking about, and the question was, and I'm repeating it because it's being recorded, so people in the future can hear what the question was. Can a city, through its ordinance, under section 2903, list the ordinance that the matter must be abated? Yes, it can, but 29 only grants criminal jurisdiction to your court, so it has to be a criminal violation for non-abatement. But that is something you can do. You can, your city can make it a criminal violation if there is a nuisance at a certain level and they fail to abate it. But what... Well, what... Yeah, you still have your burden of proof issues. You still have your... It's only a criminal citation issues. Yes. How do you get conviction? You get a conviction, it's just to actually abate the nuisance. If you are a non-court of record, your city has to go to district or county court. Unless, and we'll get to this in a minute, but I'll go ahead and put the bug in your ear, they plead guilty or nolo. Then you have other options. Okay. When you issue an order, this slide is really meant to talk about orders, your orders. Whenever you pass an order, what does it need to say? You need to set forth what we did, forth what you found, generally speaking. Make sure you list out what the individual is supposed to do, what costs are incurred with that they can be collected, any time frames. But one of the most important things for doing it isn't just for a matter of appeal. It's because any subsequent owners that take that property take it pursuant to your orders. They are subject to your orders too. It goes with the property. Even though It's a civil enforcement against an individual. So why is that important? Nagging up and leave it. And where do a lot of these come from anyway? People that don't know they've got it or they can't afford to do it. You can get issues where, and I, when I started doing stuff like this, I didn't expect this particular type of scenario to come up, but it came up more than I thought it would. You would have an individual who has a dilapidated building. They really couldn't, you know, they inherited it from somebody. They couldn't afford to keep it up or whatever. They've moved out. And they've been trying to sell it. They want to get rid of it. They can't pay the taxes on it. They can't fix it up. And so they end up letting it deteriorate, but somebody comes in and says, yeah, I want to put a convenience store there. We're going to go ahead and buy it. You can screw up the deal one way. but that owner needs to be on notice through public records as to exactly what applies. And the recovery fees and the costs and the removals, if the city has had to go in and do it, would apply to them. The city has the ability to do that, and some judgment enforcement issues that you can do, as opposed to, you can do liens and some other stuff. But they need to know it, and it needs to be clear in your order what is expected. Or a question.
What about a market
and foreclosure when it first... When you get into the procedures of actually conducting one of these, the notice provisions that your city attorney must follow must be sent to the lenders as well. Why? Because any order you issue will apply to them as well. If your city doesn't provide the lenders notice, then they have an argument as to why it shouldn't apply to them. But the procedures itself require that the lender be provided notice. Now, that's nothing that... you as judges get involved if that's something your city attorney and your prosecutors deal with. Because for you, you issue the order, and whoever applies to it, applies to. All right? Contempt. Everything in here prevents you from exercising your power of contempt. You have civil contempt and criminal contempt. If you're a court of record, you have civil and criminal. If you're a court of non-record, you kind of sort of do, but not really. The criminal... contempt powers are the ones to really use for enforcement. Chapter 54, 031. I mentioned before that a city can impose, can create what's called a structural standards commission. Now, what a structural standards commission is, under the local government code, subchapter or C, I don't remember. Allows a commission of individuals, usually they're individuals that have some experience in the construction industry or the demolition industry or stuff like that, that take part for you. Okay? If code enforcement or the city has a problem with the structural standards of a building or a property, it goes to them. Now, their authority is only for structural standards, not other types of nuisance abatements. Okay? That's why they're called a Structural Standards Commission. Now, I want to pause real quick and let you guys know, whether it's to the commission or your municipal court, whatever, the ordinance that grants you power, that gives you your jurisdiction and authority, structural standards ordinance needs to properly set out the structural standards. You can't just say, well, you got to keep it neat. You got to keep it safe. That's good. That's not good enough. Usually, it integrates your building codes, okay? But you have to, because what happens is, in order to remedy the situation, you have, the individual property owner has to know, okay, what exactly is wrong with it, so I know whether I need to fix it, whether I can fix it, whether I need to demolish it. A lot of times, what the Structural Standards Commission does is it's on the board that can look at the building codes and exactly what those structural standards are to say, okay, you're not meeting this particular standard because of XYZ. Okay? But your ordinance needs to set out those standards. It can't just be it's a danger or it's not safe. You have to say why. If you're going under a structural standards attack, you can still go under a, you know, it's unsecured and open and the other types of attacks. The structural standards commission section allows for appointments to Building and Standards Commission to hear cases. It's quasi-judicial in nature. And it provides for judicial review directly to the district court. So all of you as municipal court judges are sitting here and saying, well, Ryan, that's all fine and good, but why the heck are you telling us this if it doesn't involve us? Well, it can. Proceedings under subchapter C, Standards Commission, do not affect the ability of the municipality to jointly proceed before you. And a municipal court may enforce an order of the hearing officer, meaning back to the Structural Standards Commission, compelling the attendance of a witness or the production of documents, which means if your city has a Structural Standards Commission, they may be coming to you to say, help. The city attorney is trying to get information in their case, and the individual isn't showing up, or they're not providing the information they're supposed to. As a quasi-judicial body, they don't have the same type of power that a municipal court does, so they come to you, and you have the ability to force. But only these compel the attendance of a witness or the production of documents. That is irrespective of whether or not you are court of record or not. If you are not a court of record and you have a Structural Standards Commission there, the Structural Standards Commission can come to you and you have the power, the jurisdiction, and the ability to help them. That's why you need to know about it. But you can only help them by compelling attendance or production of documents. Any questions on that? How many cities here do you have a Structural Standards Commission? A few. Do you interact with them? Not usually. You can. And you need to know that too. A lot of times they don't interact with you because they don't know that they can come to you for help. And a coordinated effort between a Structural Standards Commission and your municipal court can be very, very helpful and can actually. Because the commission doesn't have the ability to force things or send police officers out while you do. You might want to mention that to your city attorneys. You have the ability to. Back to chapter 214, housing and other structures. Yes, ma'am, question. If you have a commission, and the question is, so if you have a commission, does your municipal court lose jurisdiction to hear? If you have a commission and you are a court of record, no, you have concurrent jurisdiction. You can still hear matters. If you're a court of non-record, never jurisdiction to begin with to hear the case, but you have jurisdiction to help the commission enforce its production orders. Make sense? I'm at least not sounding like an idiot up here. Well, maybe not an idiot. You're at least following. Okay. Chapter 214. Municipality may establish an ordinance that allows for the exact same thing we were talking about. Under 54. It is a hearing in a civil municipal court. And we go back to the same power and authority that grants courts of record the jurisdiction to hear these matters to begin with. Same thing. There is overlap. 54 allows certain types of enforcement that 214 doesn't. 214 lets certain types of enforcement that 54 doesn't. And so they interplay, but there is overlap. And the bottom line is it's up to your city attorney to which process they want to use to go after. That is a junked property. And there are a lot of junk vehicles on that property. Let's talk about junk vehicles. Sound good? Okay. You can abate vehicles based on Chapter 30, which goes back to court of record. A junk vehicle is defined as a vehicle that is self-propelled and does not have lawfully attached an unexpired license, plate, or motor vehicle inspection certificate, and is wrecked, dismantled, or partially dismantled or discharged, or inoperable for 72 hours on a public property, or 30 consecutive days on private property. You need these. One and two. Any combination of the two to be defined as a junk vehicle. How many people have dealt with a junk vehicle issue before? Okay. How many people... The legislature just changed the definition of junk vehicle. I'm going to tell you about that in just a second. But how many people got confused, and you wouldn't be in the majority if you did, with regard to whether or not you have to have an unexpired license and a motor vehicle inspection? You have to have them both, either or. There was a split kind of all over the place as to exactly what constituted a junk vehicle. House Bill 1376, it was sent to the governor May 27th of this year. There's been no request for veto on it that I'm aware of, and I checked this morning. Its intent is to try and fix that problem. It redefines junk vehicle with regard to Section 1 that we were talking about. And it changes the definition that it says a junk vehicle is a vehicle that displays an expired license plate or an motor vehicle inspection, or does not display a license plate or motor vehicle certificate. So it's all or. Any one of these, plus subsection 2, which is it's also wrecked, dismantled, and partially dismantled or discarded, then it is a junk. So that change was meant to try and make it easier on you guys to deal with junk vehicles when they come up. Junk vehicles declared to be a public nuisance. A junk vehicle, including a part of a junk vehicle that is visible at any time of the year from a public place or right-of-way, is a public nuisance. So why is it important to declare it a public nuisance? Public nuisances are what trigger the city's police power to get rid of them. But the tricky thing with this is just because something is a junk vehicle doesn't automatically mean it's a public nuisance. You can have a junk vehicle that isn't a public nuisance if it's not visible or partially visible at any time of the year from a public place or public right-of-way. So you can have a junk vehicle stored in the dark in a garage, and it's not a public nuisance. Order a search warrant to go in and see somebody's broken-down vehicle. Okay? So the junk vehicle portion... The public nuisance portion of it turns on it being visible to the public from public right-of-way. A person commits an offense if the person maintains a public nuisance and the offense is punishable by a fine not to exceed $200. If you're criminal, there's also a civil prong to that. The interesting thing to note for this is if something is declared to be a public nuisance junk vehicle, once you hit that determination, your discretion gets limited because the statutes say the court shall order abatement and removal of the nuisance on conviction. Okay? So that must be part of your order. The civil enforcement is for the court of record. The criminal enforcement is a court of non-record. So non-record... You got to order the abatement. It's a junk vehicle criminal offense. Make sense? No. Was that who said no? Upon shall or upon conviction, when you're talking about the criminal aspect of it, the criminal aspect. Courts of non-record have criminal jurisdiction. Courts of non-record do not have civil jurisdiction. A junk vehicle, 6.3 is actually a confusing statute because it angles civil and the criminal enforcements. So you have to know which one you're really trying to enforce at that time. So you can have a junk vehicle crime non-record. Conviction. Now you got your burdens, criminal aspects, jury protections, all those other things. But upon conviction that there is a junk vehicle, the non-record court shall order the judgment and removal. Yeah. So, kind of, sort of, yeah. The section that talks about this, it talks about conviction. It's actually set in the civil section. So, it's one of those that's screwy. Mark. Yeah. Slide back, it's 683.073, which says that a city can make it a crime to have this junk vehicle there. Okay? Actually, this is the state law, so it applies on state highways and throughout the state, you know, the whole state. Okay? But a lot of times, they pass their own junk vehicle ordinance that mirrors it, and that's the one that your municipal courts usually should go off of. But it is a criminal offense to have the junk vehicle viewable from a public right-of-way. That's what gives a court of non-record the ability to must order its abatement upon conviction. Okay. Yes, sir. The question was, so if it's a structural and there's it's a criminal violation to have a dangerous structure, there's a conviction, a municipal court of non-record can just order a fine, but if it's a junk vehicle criminal conviction, abatement. That's correct. Yes? Court of record, okay.
Who's going to make the decision about where the decision falls?
Okay. Question is, if you're a court of record, so you have civil and criminal jurisdiction, who makes the decision as to which one you're prosecuting under or you're going under? The short answer is your city attorney. The one bringing the case before you can either bring it before you as a civil matter, or you can bring it before you as a criminal matter. There in the state law, there are procedural aspects, notices, and have to occur. Sometimes your city will be doing both simultaneously, and then right at the end, they'll decide which one they want to do. For a junk vehicle civil enforcement, some of the procedures require a hearing. Not a trial, but it's a hearing to determine whether or not it really is a junk vehicle. Okay? And that hearing, civil hearing at that time, strictly civil matter, okay, and it's not. There's no jury, okay. If it's criminal, they have the right to a jury. Question, sir. Okay, if you're a non-record court for abatement and they don't do it. You have the same, it's part of the conviction, so you have the same mechanisms and procedures to enforce any other conviction. That's it. Yeah, exactly. But that still goes back to, you can only order the individual to fix it. In a civil context, a court of record can. You can say, if you're not going to fix it, city, you go on and fix it, you get it out of there, and you can charge them. If you have a conviction, you say, you're ordered to and remove it. And if they don't, tell the city, go in and do it. Okay? Yes, ma'am. Question. Vacant home. Okay. The building is unsecured with a empty swimming pool in the back. Okay?
Does code enforcement have to have any
If it's a secure issue, the city has to come to the court to get an order to secure the for unlawful entry. Yeah. The city can try, but they could be exposing themselves to some liability by doing so. The best advice I can give, and I always tell them, is just go get it from your municipal judge. Yeah, that's right. Okay, abatement of nuisance allows the city to adopt procedures under which, after notice in a hearing, a junk vehicle may be removed from the property and prohibit the vehicle from being reconstructed after removal. This is civil. This is court of record. Court of record have this ability. Most cities, if you've got a big junk vehicle problem, it's really better that you have a court of record. You have so many more ammunition in your arsenal to deal with it than having to go to district county court all the time. Okay, a civil court can order the removal. If they don't do it, they can order the city to go on and do it. But if you're a court of non-record, you don't have that option. Chapter 683-074C says an appropriate court. Say municipal court. It just says appropriate court. A municipality or county may issue necessary orders to enforce the procedures. So what's an appropriate court? The only court that has statutory direction to do it on the civil side, which is your court of record. Okay? How am I doing on time? Okay, doing pretty good. Let's talk a little bit about the courts of non-record. What options do you have? The original ordinance, the original PowerPoint said post-conviction options for non-courts of record. I changed that to post-plea options. So why did I change it to post-plea? Deferred disposition. You can enforce any other reasonable condition for someone that's coming, pled guilty or no contest in the punishment phase. So you can require compliance of the abatement through the deferred process. And that goes back, okay, I require them to fix it. And they don't. What do? All I can do is fine. Yeah? But you can require, all that deferred time period runs out, you can require them to show up at your court every single time and tell you what they've done to fix it. This one I like. You can reduce the fines to encourage abatement. Say, hey, look. Now, this goes for all the stuff we're talking about. This is the criminal aspect of any dangerous structure, nuisance abatement, junk vehicle, any of the abatement nuisances we're talking about. The criminal aspect of it, your courts of non-record have authority. Okay? So, and it's a separate fine for every day, up to a maximum of $2,000, unless it's pollutants and effluents, which is $5,000 a day. Those can rack up really fast. So you can say, look, you will be fined $10,000 for the 5 days and the five different convictions, or you can pay $1,500 to fix it yourself. You can actually deal with the individual to get compliance. Now, aside from what several city managers and city administrators like to think, municipal courts are not revenue generators. What's in the city's best interest usually is not going to be getting the money from them. What's it going to be? Compliance. Getting the nuisance out of there. So, use your hammers on the criminal side to do it. Goes back to, you know, sight and sight and sight till the buzzards are dead. Well, that gives you do that. Your police officers, enforcement officers need to be going out and sighting. They need to have the evidence there to prove it up in case they decide to challenge it. But if they come in and said, yes, I know it's broken down, I need to fix it, I can't right now, or they give you a story, and they plead guilty, you can work with them on the criminal matter for deferreds in order to fix it. Okay. And you can impose the full fines for every day for failing to fix it. Enhanced penalties. Your ordinances can have your penalty ranges, but you guys set your window fines. So you can set window fines for first violations for subsequent offenders. To be a subsequent offender. Daily citations, and mandatory pretrials with prosecutors and code enforcement. I actually find that to be very helpful. Get the code enforcement officer or the building inspector to meet with the individual when they get in there. Now, sometimes that can be a little bit of a problem if you get personalities that are clashing, because you'll get, usually the individual has already met the code enforcement officer or building inspector, and they may have been butting heads. But requiring at least one mandatory it lets the prosecutor know exactly where they stand right up the front. All right? And my experience has been it helps more times than it hurts. Okay, so jurisdictions of non-record courts versus record courts. Record courts have more power. The legislature specifically focused it, but it's an issue of speed. That's why they're doing it that way, to get the nuisances out of there. But you both have criminal jurisdiction. Not all courts are created equal. And I'm not referencing which court is which there. That's it. You guys have any questions? There will be no more pop-ups. And nobody threw a piece of paper at me. So either you're too bored, I was too boring, and you were asleep, or I kept you entertained enough. Okay, any questions? Thank you. Sure do. Absolutely.